Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are immersing ourselves in something really fundamental, powerful, and maybe often misunderstood.
Absolutely. We're talking about ocean waves.
We're exploring the work waves by Frederick Reichlin.
And, you know, if you think this is just about, well, water splashing on the sand, it's so much more. This material really shows how waves are this basic rhythm of our planet.
Yeah, shaping geology, influencing life.
Impacting human history, you name it, it's huge.
And it's fascinating how critical this knowledge is. Not just for appreciating the ocean, but for, well, survival and technology.
Totally. Waves are the key physical thing driving what happens on our coasts. So understanding them is essential for, I mean, everything from designing safe offshore platforms.
Right, like oil rigs or wind farms.
Exactly. And building sustainable harbors, predicting erosion, and dealing with the bigger threats now from climate change.
So for a topic this big, you need a guide who really knows their stuff inside and out. Frederick Reichlin sounds like the perfect person.
He really does. Professor Emeritus, Civil and Environmental Engineering at Caltech, PhD in Oceanography.
That's some serious academic weight. 5 decades of research in fluid mechanics, wave dynamics.
Tsunami propagation, too. He's covered a lot of ground.
But what makes his perspective stand out is not just the academic side, is it?
No, and that's what's really interesting. He's got this rare mix. He's not just the theorist. Apparently, he's a keen surfer, a sailor, someone who's spent real time on and in the water.
Oh, okay. So he gets it intellectually, but also physically, that sort of hands-on feel.
Exactly. He connects the rigorous theory, you know, the linear and nonlinear wave stuff, with that direct, almost visceral experience of the ocean.
That makes sense. It bridges the numbers and the, well, the awe of it all.
Yeah, that passion must come through in the work. So what's the main idea he's putting forward in Waves?
The core argument is pretty straightforward, but profound. Waves are the planet's number one way of moving energy around. And if you want to understand our planet, its past, its future, how it works, you have to understand wave mechanics.
So the book lays down that theoretical base, but also shows the real-world impact, right? Socially, environmentally.
Precisely. It seems to serve two kinds of readers, almost.
How so?
Well, on one hand, it's like a solid engineering text. It links concepts like refraction, diffraction, directly to coastal engineering problems.
A part it for the specialists.
Right. But for someone like us, the generally curious reader, it's more like a biography of the wave. It takes you on this journey, showing its impact on culture, our relationship with the sea, from myth all the way to, say, harnessing wave energy today.
That sounds like a really smart structure. Start simple, build complexity.
Yeah, it moves logically. Basic physics, orbital motion, then builds up to the trickier stuff, like irregular waves hitting structures.
Which is needed because apparently the most basic concept is the one we usually get wrong.
That's exactly. Let's talk about that energy transfer piece.
Okay. The big insight Reichlin stresses is that a wave isn't water moving across the ocean.
It's energy moving through the water.
Yeah. If you're floating out there, the water particle just does this little circle, this orbital motion.
Like the classic example of a duck on a pond. It bobs up and down, maybe a little forward and back.
But it doesn't get carried miles to the shore by the wave itself.
The water mostly stays put. The energy travels.
Right. And that leads to this fascinating idea of dispersion.
Ah, how the waves sort themselves out.
Exactly. You get a messy storm out at sea, creates waves of all sizes. But over huge distances, they organize into these powerful, clean swells. The longest waves travel fastest, so they reach a distant shore first. It's energy from a storm maybe days ago, thousands of miles away.
Wow. So waves are like these incredibly efficient energy messengers.
That's a great way to put it.
So if we're watching energy, basically, the ghost of the wind. How do engineers model the wilder versions, like tsunamis? There's always confusion there.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. First thing, tsunamis are absolutely not tidal waves. Tides are different physics altogether.
They come from seismic events, right?
Yeah.
Earthquakes, landslides into the ocean.
Yes. And the scary thing isn't their height in the deep ocean. They can be barely noticeable out there. It's their incredible wavelength, sometimes hundreds of kilometers long, and their speed.
Okay.
When all that energy hits shallow water near the coast, the wave feels the bottom, slows down, and piles up. That energy amplification is catastrophic.
The 2004 Indian Ocean tsunami, a horrific example of that power.
A tragic textbook case, unfortunately.
And then there are the waves that used to be just sea stories, rogue waves.
Right, walls of water that sailors talked about. For ages, scientists were skeptical.
But they're real.
Oh, they're very real,
Right.
scientifically verified. The Dropner wave in 95 was a big moment. Instruments measured it at 84 feet.
84 feet, when nearby waves were much smaller.
Exactly. It proved these weren't just exaggerations. They happened due to complex interactions, different wave systems meeting, sometimes amplifying each other in unexpected ways.
So we've got this energy pulse crossing oceans. What happens when it finally hits land? How does it become a sculpture?
Okay, this is where the process called shoaling comes in. As the wave enters shallower water, maybe water depth about half its wavelength,
It starts to drag on the bottom.
yeah, it feels the bottom. Friction slows it down. But the energy hasn't gone anywhere. So to conserve that energy, the wave has to grow taller. It bunches up, gets dramatically higher right before it becomes unstable and breaks.
In that breaking action, repeated over millennia, that's what shapes the coast.
Absolutely. Waves are constantly working, shaping forces. They cause erosion, think sea caves, cliffs, arches.
Carving away the land.
Right. But they also cause deposition. They carry sand and sediment and build things up, beaches, spits, those long barrier islands.
So the coastline isn't fixed at all. It's this dynamic zone, a constant give and take.
A battlefield, as the material puts it, between ocean energy and the land's resistance.
And since we love living near that battlefield, we've spent centuries trying to manage that wave energy. Engineering comes in.
Yes, things like breakwaters, jetties, seawalls, they're all designed using principles like wave refraction, how waves bend, and diffraction, how they spread out.
Trying to block the energy or redirect it or just weaken it.
Exactly. But Rachlin's work really highlights that this is always a negotiation, isn't it? And it often has knock-on effects.
Yeah, unintended consequences, like building a jetty.
Right. You build one to protect a harbor entrance, keep it from silting up. But that structure blocks the natural movement of sand along the coast. So the beach next door might suddenly start eroding much faster because it's starved of its sand supply.
That's a complex system. Mess with one part and you affect another. You need that deep physics understanding.
You really do. The environmental costs of getting it wrong can be huge.
That's human ingenuity trying to control nature. But the material also mentions an older kind of mastery, right? The Polynesian navigators.
Oh, that's just incredible stuff. Talk about deep ecological knowledge. They navigated the enormous Pacific Ocean without instruments as we know them,
Whoa.
by reading wave patterns, tiny subtle patterns. How swells generated far away would reflect off islands they couldn't even see yet or bend around them.
Wow. They were reading the energy signatures on the water's surface.
Essentially, yes. Turning the ocean itself into a map. It shows what keen observation and deep understanding can achieve, way before GPS.
That link between physics and observation really brings us to some key themes running through Rachlin's work.
Yeah, like the first one, physics and engineering have to go hand in hand.
You can't just build stuff, you need the theory behind it.
Right. And the theory isn't just, abstract math or academics. Something like linear wave theory, even though it's a simplification,
It's practical.
it's incredibly practical. It's a fundamental tool for calculating forces, figuring out safety factors, making sure that multi-billion-dollar offshore platform doesn't collapse. You need the physics.
And that power, that energy, it naturally leads to this idea of waves being both creative and destructive.
That duality is central. Waves create, they mix oxygen into the water, they support unique ecosystems like the intertidal zone.
Which is a tough place to live.
Incredibly tough. But waves also destroy erosion, flooding from storm surges, tsunamis. You have to respect both sides of that coin.
Which means you need good models. That brings up another theme, the hierarchy of approximations.
This is so important for anyone in science or engineering. Wave theory isn't one single perfect equation, it's layered. You start with simpler models, like linear theory, which work well for many
But
situations.
sometimes you need more.
Exactly. You might need nonlinear models for really large waves or models for irregular mixed seas. The key is knowing which model to use when and understanding its limits.
Using a too simple model for a complex situation could be disastrous.
Potentially, yes. It's about matching the tool to the job.
And the last theme you mentioned, making the unseen visible.
Yeah, I like this one. The science lets us see things that are otherwise hidden. That invisible pulse of energy traveling across the ocean.
The patterns the Polynesian navigators read.
The ghost of the wind, as Rachlin calls it. It changes how you look at the ocean. It's not just surface motion anymore. You understand the deeper reality.
Okay, let's make this even more concrete. The sources have some really memorable ways of putting these ideas. Quotes, essentially.
Yeah, that one about energy versus water is fundamental.
A wave is not water moving across the sea, but a pulse of energy moving through it. You are not watching the ocean travel. You are watching the ghost of the wind.
That just shifts your whole perspective, doesn't it? Suddenly, the ocean feels more connected to the atmosphere, to global energy flows.
It really does. Then there's one about the practical side of the theory.
Right. The beauty of linear wave theory lies not in its perfect accuracy, but in its remarkable utility.
That sums up the approximation theme perfectly. It's not about having the absolute most complex, perfect model always.
It's about having a model that works, that helps you solve the problem effectively and reliably. Practical value.
And the last one really brings it home to today's challenges, especially with climate change.
This one hits hard. We have built our greatest cities on the shore, turning our backs to the sea as if it were a decorative pond.
Yeah.
But climate change is forcing the ocean to turn and face us, and its waves are beginning to ask questions our seawalls may not be able to answer.
That's sobering. It really highlights the urgency. Sea level rise, more intense storms, the assumptions we built our coastal cities on are changing.
Our engineering needs to change too. We can't rely on yesterday's assumptions about wave forces.
Okay, so thinking about you, the listener, how does all this knowledge translate into everyday life? What are the practical takeaways?
Well, basic safety, for one. Understanding how rip currents work, those channels of water flowing back out to sea formed by breaking waves, can genuinely save your life.
Knowing not to fight it directly, swim parallel to shore. That comes from understanding the mechanics.
Exactly. And recognizing tsunami warning signs, like the sea suddenly pulling way back from the shore, that's critical knowledge in vulnerable areas.
Beyond personal safety at the beach, it helps with being an informed citizen, right?
Yeah.
Especially if you live near the coast.
Absolutely. Many communities constantly debate coastal management, building seawalls, trucking in sand for beaches, where to put jetties. Understanding a bit about wave energy and how these structures affect sand movement helps you participate meaningfully in those decisions. Ask better questions.
You can see the potential long-term impacts, not just the immediate fix.
Right. And looking ahead, this physics is crucial for our energy future.
Wave energy converters.
Yeah. There's a huge amount of kinetic energy in waves. Harnessing that reliably and efficiently for clean electricity depends entirely on understanding these principles. It's a major area of ongoing research and development.
So wrapping this up, for me, the biggest thing I'm taking away is that shift in perception. Just looking at a wave breaking isn't simple anymore. It's the end point of this incredible global journey of energy. It connects you to storms far away, to the wind, to the shape of the seafloor.
It makes the familiar profound.
Yeah. What about you?
For me, it's that idea of synthesis. You need the hard math, the rigorous physics, but you also need the practical wisdom, the observation, the understanding of complexity. Rachlin's work seems to embody that. It teaches us we need to work with natural forces, understand them, respect their power, not just try to pave over them or ignore them.
That's a powerful lesson well beyond just ocean waves.
Definitely.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acontra Foundation.